And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show for Friday, October 21st. Derek Van Riper here with Keith Law. On this episode, we'll talk about the ALCS, which now stands at 2-0 as the Astros and Yankees head back to the Bronx. Today is a travel day.
It's over.
It's done. The Yankees are dust.
Why even bother watching?
Fire everyone. Rebuild
That's
the team.
Right.
Start over.
Right.
That's the world we live in right now. We're going to talk about the Dodgers and how that has been
the cloud. We have to change the playoffs, Derek. It's not fair.
Math didn't work in my favor this time, so it must be broken. And we'll talk about your Fall League adventures.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun out there. It was really, really great. Wish there was some pitching, but I had a good time.
That's an evergreen statement about the Fall League, isn't it?
It was worse than ever. By Fall League standards, the pitching was down. It was bad.
You're fully qualified to say that, too. You're not just griping about it as someone who's been there, you know, once or twice. You've been there enough times. So you have some weight to that.
As a writer, my 16th trip through the Fall League, because we missed one. For pandemic. So yeah, my 16th run through the Fall League. There's no question the pitching used to be better in the Fall League because teams weren't paying attention to things like innings totals, right? There was just, we're just going to send, you know, some, not every team, but many teams would just send their best pitchers, right? This is great. Get them more work, get them more experience. And then it, you know, then suddenly people caught on that, oh, you can pitch someone too much. And now we've, I think, probably swung too far in the other direction. And of course, the best guys were guys like, and we can talk about this later, but it was guys like Kumar Rocker, who didn't pitch during the season. Quinn Priester, who missed a chunk of the season with non-Sierra, I think it was an oblique injury. Tink Hentz, who was just on very limited workloads throughout the season, so he didn't pitch all that much. These are three, you know, very good, highly regarded prospects who, you know, those are the best guys for the Fall League. You know, guys who didn't pitch or needed some work. Carson Wisenhunt is out there. He still hasn't debuted because he was sick, but he'll probably pitch. I missed him because he hadn't started yet, but if he hasn't pitched by now, he'll probably pitch very soon out there. Those guys are great. There aren't enough of them. And there are still teams that still won't send those guys. I'm like, what are you doing? There's no Hawaiian Fall League anymore. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so it's not like teams send those players to Caribbean Winter Leagues, which would be awesome if they did so. So a lot of it is just, well, they're just not going to get any work in, or they'll just pitch in strikes, I guess. I don't know. This is, I'm going way far down the rabbit hole at this point, but the real message is send more pitching.
It would be appreciated.
That's all I ask. It's not much.
Well, let's start with the ALCS. The NLCS was off on Thursday. That was the travel day. So we're not going to talk about that series much since nothing has happened since the last episode dropped, but the Astros did take a 2-0 lead over the Yankees. And there were two pretty significant plate appearances that shaped the outcome of this game. Alex Bregman's 3-run home run, which was a nice pull down the left field line home run, mostly only at Minute Maid Park sort of home run. But guess what? That's where the game was played. And then Aaron Judge narrowly missing a home run late. Like that was it. Like those two swings were game altering swings that, and I think even in Yankee Stadium, Judge's ball would have been a home run. So, tough break for the Yankees.
There's a headline on MLB.com. Yanks seek home cooking after Judge's near home run. I mean, is there any greater admission of what a farce that right field fence is?
Yeah.
Not that left field in Houston is that much more serious, right? Is Bregman's home run, I haven't seen, but was Bregman's home run actually a home run in that many parks? Look like maybe a deep fly ball in most places.
A short list of parks where that would be a home run. And the bigger issue, I guess, I saw this tweet from Maury Brown at BizBallMaury on Twitter. is the strikeouts. The Yankees have struck out 30 times in the first two games. The Astros have struck out 8 times. And I realize Gerrit Cole hasn't pitched yet in the series, but that's a massive difference. And the regular season K rates between these two teams were not that different, of course. So when you're not putting balls in play, you are going to run into some trouble. Your offense will run cold the way the Yankees offense has run cold. But the real way I would look at it is the two Astros pitchers have pitched great. Verlander has been great. Robert Valdez was excellent last night. And he continues to be a guy that I'm underrating all the time. Even though I know he's good, I still underrate what he brings to the table every fifth day.
It's funny. I was, this is just apropos of nothing. But if I just told you there was a pitcher named Framber, you'd say, oh, he's a lefty, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why. That name just rings, right? He is really good. He made my, the very back of my column on players I was wrong about this year. I had a short note on him where, just because I'd never written all that much about him. And obviously he has become an above average starter. I mean, I feel like a lot of that Astros rotation, after Verlander, it's sort of a no-name rotation. These are not, these are pitchers who are all probably less well-known than their performance would merit, like even to reasonably serious baseball fans, unless you're a fantasy player. We tend to know a lot of those guys. These are not Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez. Not that famous. All really good, as it turns out. Astros have done a really good job, especially with non-draft players, right? Their drafts got much worse after they stopped picking in the first couple of picks. Let go of basically the entire amateur staff, which they've now staffed back up on that side. They were picking at the end of the round, basically picking a lot of players just off the analytical model, and they were just leaving a lot of value on the table. And what's saving them is the work that their international group is doing. And that's where you're seeing a lot of the, you know, the three pitchers I just mentioned all came through that. I think your comment about underrating Framber Valdez is probably a function of he was never, I think, on any of our top 100s. Like, I don't think MLB or Fangraphs. I know I never had him up there. He was always in my Astros top 10 or so. But also, the system wasn't great. And it was, hey, this guy's got pretty good stuff. He might be a reliever. Command's probably never going to be there. Guess what? It is. They've done a really good job with all three of those guys that I mentioned. Each one of them needed to develop in some different way, but Garcia is the only one I think who ever made any of my top 100s. I know Garcia did. God, when I did that, I even heard from people in the industry who were like, you're really high on Luis Garcia. I guess I got one right, at least. One right and two wrong out of those three guys. All of them have turned into very legit major league starters. And I think it's, you know, worth, you know, this brief discussion we're having to say, hey, Astros did a really good job there. You know, people love to slag the Astros for lots of things. You will hear a lot of comments, oh, the Astros only, you know, they only won because they picked first 3 years in a row and they had all these high draft picks and that's why they ended up building this club. I mean, yeah, it's not true, but they did a lot more than that, right? That's, you know, Bregman and Kyle Tucker were second and fifth, but of those first overall picks, right? Mark Appel was one.
Yep.
They got very little value from him. Brady Aiken was, you know, didn't sign. That's how they ended up with Bregman. It's more than just a couple of high draft picks there. They've done a lot of things well. Now across two regimes too. James Click has made a lot of very good moves as well. And because he has staff back up on the amateur side, you know, sort of feel like, oh, this idea that the Astros were going to dip at some point because the talent pool was going to dry up. Well, it's slowed. Certainly the farm system is not as strong as it has been, but it's going to come back too. I feel reasonably confident in that. And in the meantime, it's their development work that has really boosted them. And oh, by the way, the guy who was director of player development for them, Pete Petilla, is now the GM of the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
So somebody else recognized the good work that was happening there too.
It's an organization that people are quick to judge for past missteps, but in doing that, you look past all the things that have been done correctly and done well for a prolonged period of time. Up and down this lineup, you have players that have exceeded expectations. That's been true for the Astros for a few seasons. It's true in the rotation. It's true in the bullpen. The question I have coming out of last night's game is Brian Abreu's working in short relief right now. Are they going to do the same thing they've done with Christian Javier with Brian Abreu in a future year? Do you think the secondaries and the command come along enough where he ends up shifting into a longer role and possibly emerges as a starter for them down the road?
That's a good question. I mean, of course, my immediate reaction is, I think that guy's probably a reliever. Well, you know, you'd think I would learn at some point. Don't dismiss these Astros guys. The thing is, the Astros had been working him in relief a good bit in the minors anyway, because the command and control were truly not there. He's farther away. Actually, probably the best one-to-one comparison there would be Framber, where it was more than anything else a function of command and control. And he is farther away from getting to what I would consider the sort of a minimum threshold of command and control to be a major league starter at age 25 than Framber. So I won't say never, but I think the two factors, one, he's just got farther to go. And two, that the Astros have, I'm just pulled up his stats here. He's never had a year where he didn't at least make a couple of relief appearances, like even in the minors. And I think it was probably just because he wasn't throwing enough strikes. They were not consistently working him as a starter. And he hasn't started a game anywhere now since before the pandemic, which would have been in AA. And so, you know, obviously the pandemic interrupted a lot of things. And Need also probably changed their plans for him. I would guess, I mean, not ask them specifically what the long-term plan is for him. They probably leave him in a relief role, figuring this guy's really effective there, still doesn't have just bit flat out the control to move to the rotation. Let's just continue to capture the value that we found here rather than risk getting nothing by moving him to a role that he has not tried in 3 years. You know, obviously it wouldn't be until next year. So we'd be talking about almost 4 years between starts. So that's not informed by what anything from the organization. That's just me knowing the player, looking at the history, saying, this is probably what I would do here. Him, I'd leave. Whereas even Valdez and Javier, two totally different guys in terms of why I questioned whether they could be starters. But they were both closer to that, to being able to be starters, than Abreu is right now as we're discussing
it. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I do think going several years now without making a start, even as a up and down guy, that's mm-hmm. a pretty good indication that they don't see him that way long term. But just the fact that they've had a few guys shift roles and do it successfully and exceed expectations makes me never want to count anybody out in the mix and in that Houston group of pitchers. This is a strange Yankees team, because I think people are way too down on them right now relative to the deficit. It's been two close games. It's been a good series so far. Luis Severino pitched really well. It was basically that one mistake to Bregman that was the difference in the entire game. They hit a lot of balls hard. If you look at the top five hitters in that lineup, I think he had 11 hard hit balls, 95 plus mile per hour batted balls from that group last night. So mm-hmm. it's not the complete failure that people might lead you to believe, even with the high strikeout total that I mentioned earlier. And as I mentioned before, Gerrit Cole not having pitched yet in this series, that's a game they should win for sure. As close to a must win as a non-elimination game can be in game three.
Right. Yes. Yes to all of this. The Astros haven't announced a starter.
They have not. I guess they could follow the order from previous series and it would be...
If only we could look this up somewhere.
If only they would just tell us who the starter was.
Well, that's the other thing. I actually went to look, right? I don't trust my memory on this anymore. And so it's Javier or Garcia, right? Because McCullers started but Garcia ended up finishing the 18-inning game also. So if they just wanted to go with the guy who was the most rest, it would be Javier. This was all because I just went to see. Let me take a look and see who the actual starter is. And Cole is listed, but nobody is listed for Houston. I guess it doesn't matter because they're not playing tonight. I have a thing. This is more fall league complaining, because I'm sure that's why everybody is listening today.
Yeah.
And actually, this would be more minor league complaining, too. Like, we should know all the starters, especially in the minors, right? We should know all the starters like 2-3 days in advance. Like, this isn't a surprise. This idea, I have had plenty of times this year where I would get in the car and still not know who at least one of the two starting pitchers was going to be at a game that was less than 2 hours away. So I'm pretty sure the Astros know who they're starting, and that should probably be listed. Maybe they announced it and I just haven't seen it anywhere. I wasn't, after the game ended last night, I turned everything off and I was like, I am not doing anything baseball until now, actually. So it's about 12 hours later.
What did you do? Did you read?
We watched a couple episodes of Welcome to Wrexham.
Okay, yeah.
which since my wife's family is from Wales, they're from South Wales. Wrexham is in North Wales. However, we both speak a little Welsh now. So we watched this episode where there was quite a bit of spoken Welsh in it. We are enjoying the series greatly. And then, I read a little bit and I finished up a blog post on the new restaurants where I ate in Arizona, because people have been asking, are you going to do a food post from your trip to Arizona? The problem I run into in Arizona is having lived there and having been there so many times, I also have a bunch of favorites that I keep going back to. So I always say, you got to play the hits. So I did do a lot of that. But I always actually feel now some obligation to try at least a couple of new places. And I did. So that's up on my personal blog with two that I really liked that I would actually go back to. Only one that was just kind of a dud, I would say. So it was actually reasonably well. But it was just sort of, nope, there's plenty of baseball going on. I got a lot to do. Turn it off for a little bit.
It's good to take those breaks.
Yes. Good for mental health, sanity. Also because I don't want to start. At some point I will turn into a jaded, old man yells at clouds. I want to stave that off as long as possible.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, beautiful transition, Keith, perhaps even unknowingly, because there are a lot of old men yelling at clouds right now. Some of them are columnists for papers in Southern California.
Good papers.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Well, times are tough. We're all stressed out. And, everybody needs attention or needs to get the pat on the back sometimes. So I can understand that. I'm a human who feels like I need a little love once in a while. So here's the thing about the Dodgers. I thought Jay Jaffe had this illustrated really well in a piece over at Fangraphs. He looked at the top 5-year span winning percentages. So how good are teams over 5-year spans? And he went back to 1961. And the Dodgers, since 2018 through this season, have a winning percentage of .646. It is easily the best 5-year span we've seen from a team since 1961. It's a long time. So even the old men, yelling at clouds, they were around for this pretty much this whole time. It's about 20 points higher than the winning percentage of the next best team. That was the 95-99 Braves. I actually remember those teams. Those teams were good. And the 72-76 Reds, a little before my time. It's also 23 points better than the current version of the Astros, who are also historically a strong regular season team. Mm-hmm. The really interesting thing about all this is, aside from how dominant the Dodgers have been in the regular season over a prolonged span, the five best teams by this measure since 1961 have only won five World Series titles.
Right.
They have a shot at a six because Houston's still alive right now. But you would assume that number is higher based on the dominance of those teams. And I'm wondering how much of the system doesn't work, the playoffs are broken, how much of that is just people being as bad as we've ever been at accepting losses in sports and otherwise. I just think we're terrible losers right now, Keith. We're just bad at it. If things don't go our way, we have tantrums.
Right. Change the rules.
Change the rules. My play was perfect. The game was flawed. No.
My kid deserved an A.
How much of it is a problem that the Dodgers aren't still playing right now to you?
I mean, to me, this is just this is the randomness of short series in baseball. One of my commenters on my reader chat on my blog this week, and one of the commenters pointed out, and he was referring to someone else's research, that it's basically never more than 60-40 odds in any series. And 60-40 odds is going to produce a lot of upsets And these are just good. I would doubt that you ever really get 60-40 odds in a playoff series because you're just getting the better team. Those teams had to win at least half their games, right? So you're probably looking at about 55-45 odds, and that's nothing. But that's going to produce upsets all the time. And I think this idea, I don't know, you know, I used to rail a bit against the idea that people would say, you win the World Series, you're the best team. No, those are two separate things. And I used to come at it more of this idea of people were saying, oh, this team's better because they won a playoff series. This team's better because they won a World Series. And that's not true. And now I feel like I'm almost on the other side of it where people are trying to say, well, the playoffs aren't good because they don't produce the best team. They don't, but the best team doesn't win. They're just two different things. Dodgers were the best team in baseball this year. I don't think there's a whole lot of argument about that. They also lost a short series in the playoffs to a pretty good team. Okay.
That happens.
That happens. And by the way, people who are like, well, the Padres only won 89 games this year. Yeah. And then they got Juan Soto at the end of July. And Josh Hader and Brandon Drury, they got better.
Yeah.
So, you know, on a 162-game basis, does that same roster win a few more games? And maybe it's a little less galling. I don't know. Maybe some of those Dodger columnists would be whining anyway. But I don't think they lost to a bad team. And I think it's just this failure to recognize that they're two different things. We have the regular season has its purpose. The playoffs have their purpose. I think they're kind of different, and that's fine. It is almost like this is how you grow up as a baseball fan. You learn that they're two different things. I saw a lot of it's not fair. Yeah, well, universe isn't fair. Toughen up.
There's plenty of unfair things that happen.
And this is the thing that like, oh my God, I write trivial things for a living, but the hand-wringing, I mean, I think one of those appeared in the op-ed section, unnamed major newspaper. Really? You know, massive nationwide pushes to erode civil rights for various populations in the United States. But let's talk about how the Major League playoffs aren't fair. Okay.
I think that's why we're bad losers collectively, because I think this type of railing sort of scratches the itch. If you feel that way as a fan, and it's validated when you open the paper the next morning, you just continue to act that way and think that way and feel that way. Oh, no, I do want fire. I do want changes to the Dodgers. You can't look at that team, that organization, and pick out clear and obvious flaws with how they're getting to the win totals they're getting to every year. They're just not there right now.
If 2 weeks ago, while the Dodgers were out in the first round bye, and you and I had had a conversation, what do the Dodgers need to do to improve? Right? People would have been like, are you cracked? What do you mean? They just won 110 games. There really is no improvement from there. That is basically the upper bound of what a major league team can win in the regular season. I understand the record is a few wins higher, right? But where at that point you are in, to win more than that, you need exceptional luck, a particularly weak schedule, right? You put the Dodgers in the AL Central this year, maybe they win 116 games. But I look at that club and I think, I mean, the only thing that went wrong really for them is Walker Buehler. I just don't look at that club or organization and say, man, they really got to work on X.
They spend, they develop players, they trade, they do everything.
They draft really well. They win a lot of trades. They've done pretty well on the international side, actually. I'd say very well on the international side. I was just out in Fall League. Guess what? They have more prospects coming. Sorry, guys.
Of course they do.
Of course they do. They just keep doing it, finding guys. They hit on guys later in the draft. I missed Emmett Sheehan. He was a sixth rounder in 21. He was in Fall League, apparently. I saw almost everybody. I don't know how I missed any one reliever because I felt like there were some guys I saw three times. But he was throwing the hell out of it. And whether he's a starter or a reliever in the long term, there's a chance he's going to be a starter. They took a sixth rounder in less than a year, turned him into a legitimate big league prospect. He's going to be a big leaguer. Nick Destrini from the same draft, fourth round, out of UCLA. It's not like nobody saw those guys. Emmett Sheehan was from BC. Boston College, not British Columbia. And these guys are legitimate major league prospects. We're going to get there pretty soon. Anyone could have had them, but it's the Dodgers who did. Dodgers saw them. Saw something they liked, got them in, developed them fairly quickly. They're going to be major leaguers. Or you know what? Or they're going to be trade fodder for the Dodgers at some point fairly soon. They just do things really, really well. And so, you know, to me, there's nothing about, oh, they've got to change this. They've got to change the culture. They've got to change the manager. Hey, I don't think Dave Roberts is the greatest tactical manager. I think he's probably a little bit below my personal threshold. I don't think losing a 5-game series is a firing offense. That's not why you fire a manager. And I know teams have done so for less, but that ain't it. To me, that is, would you fire a manager because he lost 3 games out of 4 in the middle of July? No. So you wouldn't do this in October either.
No, and I do think the other part of being a manager that can be overlooked is balancing a lot of different personalities in the clubhouse over a long season. It seems like Dave Roberts does that well. Even if there are tactical shortcomings, there's still another aspect of the job. So all of this is to say, you can present the historical argument, teams this good typically don't win as much as you think. You have to deal with it, and people are still going to complain and complain and complain. I think the funny thing, too, is I saw a couple jabs at the Dodgers' only World Series in this recent stretch being in the 2020 season. It was a shortened season. It shouldn't count. First off,
I hate that.
You could say with as much certainty about any team right now that the Dodgers would have been a playoff team if we had been able to play a full season in 2020. As much as you could say that about a team, the proof in the 2 seasons before and after it is there.
Yeah, right. They didn't go 31-29.
Yeah.
Right? And just eke into the playoffs.
Also, there was more variance in the 2020 playoffs because there were more series. There were more teams in the field. It was actually harder to get through that field without slipping.
Right. Didn't they play an extra round?
They played an extra round. They played the Brewers. The Brewers were really banged up. Their opening matchup. If Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff are both healthy and they go in and just pitch 2 gems and the Brewers knock the Dodgers out in 2020 in that alternative universe, I think I might understand a little more.
The Dodgers fans would be saying it doesn't count.
Sure. Exactly.
Shortened season. Never happened.
That counts.
Of course it counts.
That World Series counts the same as any other World Series.
I mean, it's like if the Padres lose this series to the Phillies, and they're like, well, Fernando Tatis didn't play, so it doesn't count.
Accept it. You just have to accept reality.
That is what this all comes down to, right? And this, oh my God, I'm going to get probably slightly political here. This is like a societal problem here where people are refusing to accept reality. And, you know, going back and saying the 2020, well, that didn't count. It's historical revisionism. It happened. Did Barry Bonds actually hit 73? Is that the actual record? Son of some dead ball player just keeps ranting about how that one doesn't count. You know, I mean, God, that guy's 15 minutes up a long time ago. Turn off his microphone. What happened, happened. We can have discussions about context, certainly, if you want to, you know, have a discussion about PED use around the home run record. It's a conversation we can have. The record is what it is. That's a hard number. There is no dispute over the number of home runs Barry Bonds hit in one season. That is more than any other player hit in one season. The LA Dodgers won the World Series in 2020. Whether you like it or not, hey, facts don't care about your feelings, right? It just, that is what happened. We can always have discussions of context. That is the study of history. Context matters for just about anything. But you cannot deny what happened, because to me, that is a very short, slippery slope down to denying any historical event you simply don't like or don't want to believe happened because of bias or because you don't want to believe people are that terrible or whatever it is. You can have the discussion about what this means, but you cannot deny what actually happened. And that, I just feel like we are, I don't want to see that leaking into sports, because it's bad enough that we have that happening in politics.
Yeah.
In sports, we actually have pretty clear records. We have pretty clear data on lots of things. This happened. The Dodgers won the World Series in 2020. Barry Bonds hit 73 home runs in one season. We know these things. Just accept them. We can have that conversation. I'm not particularly interested in rehashing the Barry Bonds home run record conversation, but fine. You want to have that conversation? Just go do it over there. You can do that. You can have that discussion of context. We're probably going to end up just going in circles, but that's fine. But you can't deny what actually happened. And to me, that is just incredibly, incredibly frustrating, probably because I've seen it in so many other areas. People who followed me on Twitter for a long time know I was pro-vaccine and arguing against anti-vaxxers way before COVID ever hit. And that, anti-vaxxers are straight up denialists. And it drives me up the wall, because that gets people hurt, sick, killed. You know, seeing it in sports doesn't have the same consequences, but I think it all stems from the very same impulse to, I don't like this, and therefore I'm going to say it didn't happen. And I just have no time for that.
That's the thing. Outside of sports, especially, the consequences are much more significant.
Right.
But thinking that way in sports, I think, bleeds over into other aspects of your life. So accept the facts of reality.
Well, it's the you often see people complaining about news media outlets treating politics as sports, right? This is a contest. We use these words. We use the same words from sports. Sports context. It's a contest. It's a race. And when we're discussing a game or series or even a season, right, it's better for us if things are close. And so, but we can't really affect the outcome in any way at all. Whereas news media can affect the outcome of political races. And again, because they benefit greatly when a race is close, they have strong incentive to skew their coverage in a way that makes these races closer. So I think what happens in sports does end up bleeding over into the rest of society. And I don't want to see the sportsification of the rest of my life. I like sports. I just want to keep it in its little box. I have a spot right here on the bottom shelf of my closet. It can stay right there.
I don't know if it can be undone, Keith. I really don't. I mean, I think the conversations that people should be having right now, if you're frustrated about the way the postseason format works, propose what you'd like to change about it to make it more like the regular season. I think there are two simple adjustments that make some sense to me. One would be reducing the number of off days and travel days in the postseason, because then your depth, which matters, which accounts for the gaudy win totals when you have the best possible roster for the longest period of time, your depth matters. Your bottom relievers are going to pitch more. There might be some guys on your bench that have to come in and play a little bit more because there are no breaks for off days for players to rest, recover, all that. So if you take off days away, then you have to say, oh, if there's no off days, how do we handle travel? Well, maybe make home field advantage a bigger deal. If you want the regular season to count more, you host the entire series. So you do those two things. Those tweaks don't radically change it, but they do change it enough. Now, from a fan perspective, if your team doesn't go to the playoffs very often and you get in as a wild card and you don't get a home game, you're pretty disappointed by not getting a chance to go to a home game, right? That's kind of a big part of the fan experience.
Yeah. The problem is, I think both those things are no-goes at the negotiating table. The owners would oppose having further seat, right? The first round, you can end up without a home game.
Yep.
In this new format. But home games are money. Even just one is a lot of money. And so you're going to see owners, I think, oppose that. And I believe players would really strongly oppose reduction of off days in the postseason. Because off days are one thing they've fought for during the regular season. The sanctity of off days, the spacing of off days. I don't blame them. Baseball's, we have the longest regular season, the most games. It wears these guys down. They value their days off. I completely understand that. I mean, I think you're right in terms of that helping the postseason where you that fourth starter ends up mattering a lot more. The back end of the bullpen ends up mattering a lot more. And then you know what happens also? We probably get fewer strikeouts.
Yep.
At least in some of those games, which is the one on-field issue I've had with the playoffs so far, is I think it's just less interesting for fans in general. I don't think I'm speaking just for myself. I think we want more balls hit into play. God, that Padres rally against the Phillies the other day was weird and interesting and almost like, wait, they scored how many runs without a homer? What? Is that allowed?
Yeah. It's old school.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, obviously, my wife is a Phillies fan, so she was not thrilled. But as a neutral observer, I was like, hey, this was a pretty interesting game, actually. And I was kind of into it. And honestly, a game with those two really good starters, right? It's now a little more unpredictable, but Nola had been money basically all season and then just kind of didn't have it. Like it was, and he looked fine early.
Yeah.
And then just had that, the home run to Drury. But barely got over the wall. I think the Bell one was the one where it's like, all right, that's that one. Yeah, you got me. But then that inning where Nola just kind of unraveled what ended up being his last inning was kind of fascinating. Just as, again, as a neutral fan, it's like, oh, this is pretty fun, interesting. You had some good base running. You had a lot of balls hit into play. It was just, I don't know a better word for it. It was interesting in that. And it reminded me more of like, I love this stuff in baseball. I like big home runs. Obviously, when Kyle Schwarber hit that one game one, we all had the Bryce Harper reaction. Oh my God. And the exit velocity backed it up, as it turns out. But I like a rally with a lot of balls hit into play. Those are pretty fun and interesting. I think they're more fun now because they're rarer. So I was pretty into that. And I would love to see anything that gets us there in the playoffs. I do wonder if the pitch clock, I think we discussed that a week or two ago, you know, that might end up helping too, where pitchers just can't be throwing. God, who was it? Hader was just like sitting 99 to 100. You know, where a lot of pitchers just unable to do that because they've got to hold back a little bit because in 30 seconds, you got to throw another pitch. You got to throw another pitch. You got to throw another pitch. In the minors and Fall League, it's 20 seconds. I think it helped. I still saw plenty of velocity. It's not like guys weren't able to throw hard, but maybe you got to take a little something off and that ends up with more balls hit into play. I'm interested to see what results from the first year of a pitch clock in the majors. And then maybe they make some further adjustments from there. But I'm a pretty avid supporter of the pitch clock for multiple reasons. And I do hope that that is one of the outcomes. And that'll improve. Then that's two ways we're improving the product on the field. The pace is a little better. And hopefully we get more balls hit into play.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that implementation and hoping that, I know with all the, you know, we talked about fatigue units and the work of Dr. Mike Son and the potential for increased injuries. I'm hoping that teams and players have a good plan to not let that happen.
Shame on them if they don't. Dr. Son's work has been out there for at least 5 years, right? And he's available around. I saw him in a game in spring training, I think it was this year. Like, it's not like he hasn't talked to teams. Everyone knows, and his work, a lot of his work is public. So, and for folks who haven't seen it, it's basically if, as you reduce the time between pitches, the probability of injury does increase because pitchers are pitching fatigued. And the number one thing we know about what gets pitchers hurt is that pitching while fatigued increases risk of injury. Any pitcher can get hurt basically at any time. It's just the mere act of throwing this hard and throwing as hard as you can specifically is correlated with higher risk of injury. But pitching while fatigued is a major factor that you can control, that teams can control, pitchers can control. And okay, this is going to increase fatigue on each pitch. You have to make some kind of adjustment. I also hope that if they do this for a year or two, I've seen nothing to indicate there are increased injuries in the minors. But if they do this in the majors for a year or two, and we think there is a statistically significant increase in injuries, I hope there is an adjustment that they make. I hope that everybody's aware of that. I think the union will be. I think they're watching for that. You know, I don't necessarily trust the owners to do what's in the best interest of players, although I could argue that it is in their financial interest to keep pitchers healthy. But also 30 seconds is long. It's 10, obviously it's 10 seconds longer than the one they're using in the minors. And I don't know of any evidence at all of minor league pitchers being more likely to get hurt with the pitch clock. And I think 30 seconds is based on a long ago reading of Dr. Son's work. So he should, if he's listening, he should feel free to chime in and correct. I don't think that is short enough to really increase the risk of injury. And maybe that's what they're also doing. Maybe they're saying, all right, this is not as short as what we did in the minors, but let's start with something. It's very conservative to at least minimize the risk of an increase in pitcher injuries.
Yeah, if they're going to progressively shorten that clock up over time, that's fine. It's a good way to do it without adjusting it too much.
Have you been to a game with the 20-second pitch clock? Because it's a big difference.
It was one of the first years they were doing it in the Fall League.
Fall League.
Just the Sheffield pitch. So 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, because they've been messing it with it only certain parks, but now I think they're doing it at all parks. It's everywhere. I was in the minors this year. I think all levels I went to had it. I mean, obviously, we've talked about it. I'm absolutely a fan. It is a noticeable, 20 seconds is a pretty noticeable difference in pace of game. I have a feeling 30 seconds, it's not going to shave that much time off the major league games. It's not going to be that noticeable. You know, it might shave 5 to 10 minutes off. Whereas at the minor league level, I think we've lost, I think the studies showed 25 minutes. I shouldn't say losing. We're gaining. Yeah. We're getting that time back.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for everybody.
I think it's great. Look, the criticism, I really don't love having the commissioner of baseball denigrating the product. And all his talk about pace of play is denigrating the product. However, we can have those conversations behind the scenes and say, hey, yeah, there's a lot of dead time in baseball. And we might be losing people. You know, everyone's switching to watching pickleball. See, there's two professional pickleball circuits now.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready for it.
I didn't know what that was 3 years ago.
Fastest growing sport in America.
Apparently so, yeah.
Probably the world. I would guess there's at least a shot that
it's the
fastest growing sport in the world, too. Yeah. It takes so little to play it.
The gym where we belong, they have pickleball courts, actually. I need to learn to play, apparently. Anyway, yeah, that is an issue. It's a competitive disadvantage that baseball has against some other sports. And I actually think eliminating some of the dead time, we're never going to catch football because it's a different experience and because of betting. However, when you see the comparisons of, you know, how much dead time there is in baseball, how much dead time there is in football, we shouldn't have as much as they have.
Yeah.
And I think that the pitch clock is going to get us, right? We'll be somewhere in between football and then, you know, a continuous sport like hockey or soccer, which, as I've mentioned before, I grew up a huge hockey fan. One thing I always loved hockey. I always loved baseball. I always viewed them as very different viewing experiences. Baseball is a little more leisurely, whereas hockey, you know, if the game is close, you are on the edge of your seat the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I absolutely love that about it. And it is a continuous activity, whereas baseball is obviously, you know, a series of discrete events, and those are two different things, and I love them both. But we can have a little less time between those discrete events. I'd also be okay with that.
I'm right there with you. And just putting a bow on the what could you change to make playoff baseball more like regular season baseball? I think the only other thing you could do is make series a little bit longer. You know, go from best of three to best of five in that wild card round. Go from five to seven in the DS round. I don't know if you have enough room on the calendar to do that without shaving a few games off the regular season.
Yeah, where do you stand on the shaving games off the regular season? I have a strong opinion. Are you shocked?
I'm not opposed to it. I know it does some things to records, and people are obsessed with baseball stats and records. I love baseball stats and records, but I actually think it could be a better long-term change to take a dozen games off the regular season, go to a 150 instead of 162. Are you going to enjoy the regular season that much less if you're getting that back in the form of longer playoff series that actually get a little bit closer to what people want?
So, yeah, the records are, it's a huge thing to me. And, you know, I say that recognizing we haven't had a good record chase in a while, but they do tend to be pretty good for the sport. When someone's chasing a cumulative counting stats record. The other problem I have, if you do that, you're going to have to compensate basically half the teams for all that lost revenue, right? If you shave a dozen games off the regular season, everyone loses six home games, and then the 16 teams that don't make the playoffs just lose. They just lose out. There's nothing coming back on the other end. I have a feeling most owners would say, at the end of the day, say, no, this is actually a financial loser for us. Less attendance. Is that my cat?
Categories. I don't have a cat.
Yeah. This Mike loves bias cat, huh? God, he was so, that was so loud. I was like, that cannot possibly be Mike.
It's a great mic.
It really is. It's terrifying, actually. Like, I think it's picking up my thoughts.
It might have been doing that earlier.
Possibly. I would see, you know, TV contracts would be less, right? Six fewer, you know, 12 fewer broadcasts, six fewer home games. That's a lot of lost revenue for owners, and I don't see them going for that. And I understand that, right? That's, you know, baseball is also a business. I am comfortable with it being a business as long as it is reasonably fair to the laborers also. And I mean, in this case, there's also less money for the players, right? Less revenue means less money to the players. I don't think anyone's really going to go for that in the end. And then you run into, if you're not shortening the regular season, you run into the calendar problem. And I agree with that, where baseball is basically expanded as far as it can in both directions due to weather. You could just wait for climate change and they could be playing, you know, November baseball in Bangor, Maine. But for right now, it's probably a little cold.
By then, I'll be the old man shaking my fist at the clouds. It's going to be actually pretty terrible. You do get kind of boxed into the current structure, which means you probably have to just find as much joy as you can in the playoffs for what they are.
Yes.
It's going to be a surprise, and that's fine. Yep. Predictable things can be pretty boring.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima Crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew neck t-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
Let's talk about your fall league adventures, Keith. You saw a lot of players. You were there for 12 games?
12 games. I had 12 games. I was on the my flight was a little delayed, so I missed the Monday afternoon games. It was going to be tight anyway. So I got Monday night, two a day for 4 days, and then they did a triple header at Chase Field on Saturday, which was fantastic. I think actually tomorrow they're doing a triple header at Phoenix Muni, which used to have a fall league team until about 10 years ago when Arizona State took it. But they're going to do three games there, which, like, from any perspective, I will say from my perspective, was fantastic because there was no, oh God, I want to be at both these games at the same time. One's in Surprise, one's in Mesa. That's not physically possible yet. So I'm going to have to make a choice. I just got everybody. And they did it well. I mean, they only did seven inning games at Chase Field, which was because there's not enough pitching. That was one day. I was fine with some of the seven inning games the other days because you know, who needs to see the last reliever on the staff, right? I was fine with that. At Chase Field, I wish they'd kept going because they were also really trying to get an at-bat for everybody on the roster because there were a few more fans there. There were a bunch of families there, and that was great. I loved that. It kept me very busy. I was very engaged the entire day because it was, any of these, I wanted to get one more swing out of this guy. It was the only time I saw Aaron Zavala the whole week. I got one swing. Still, at least I physically saw him. I know what he looks like as a human being. That was great. That triple header thing, I hope they continue doing that because it was great across the board. And I think there were a few more fans there. As turned out, it poured that day too. So we probably would have lost a day of fall league games. Instead, we got three games in because the roof was closed. Although it did rain a little bit through. The roof doesn't close completely. It was funny. It was like being in an old house or something, right? We're just, that door doesn't quite close 100%. Oh, that's great. Yep. We're just sitting there in the back of the scouts section, like, I'm singing Travis's Why Does It Always Rain on Me? How did I pick the one row where there's water coming in?
That's hard to do, to get rained on in Chase Field with the roof shut.
With the roof closed.
That's very tough to do. So
right?
You're probably very lucky.
I didn't feel lucky.
Maybe in hindsight.
You probably want to talk about players I saw.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, I mean, Jackson Merrill was kind of the headliner of your recap piece.
Yeah, he was great.
Does he qualify as maybe the biggest riser of the players you saw? Not that he wasn't expected to be good, right? Early draft pick, but it's just whose stock has jumped the most since you either last saw them or last evaluated them around their draft class?
Yeah, he was. So I didn't see him his draft spring, even though he's not that far from me, but he was a late pop-up guy that spring. And this was spring of 21. So it was still pandemic stuff. And I was just going to fewer games, but he's definitely one where I was kicking myself. Cause I could have gotten there, but by the time I knew he had a chance to, I didn't think he was a first round, right? Area guys around here were like second, definitely third. And, their season was nearly over by the time his name came around to me as somebody who could go that high. And then the Padres took him at the back of the first round, and the area guys were, it seems like a reach. He's not that physical. He went out this offseason, too, and got quite a bit stronger. and you really run. I think he really plays shortstop, and he's going to hit. I don't know what the power is going to be like. I think he got stronger to the end of making better quality contact. Maybe there'll be power there at some point. Right now, he's just putting the ball in play. It is just good quality contact, use the whole field, kind of what you want a 19-year-old to do. He would probably be the biggest riser. I don't think he was the best prospect I saw. That's probably Jordan Lawler. Actually, Jordan Lawler or Jordan Walker from the Cardinals. The Cardinals, to their great credit, sent a tremendous, they sent Jordan Walker, shortstop Mason Winn, who looked amazing in the field and showed real discipline at the plate and get a lot of hard contact out of him. But I think his patience at the plate was very real, like very select. He was truly selective. And Tink Hens, who I mentioned earlier. So thank you to the Cardinals for sending some really good prospects. They actually also sent some decent relievers too. So I would probably say Walker or Lawler is the best prospect, you know, in terms of where they'll be on my rankings. They're both, I think those guys are both going to be superstars. Noelvi Marte was out there. I only got a little bit out of him. He looked really good at third base too. He's moved the Reds, after the Reds traded for him at the end of July, they immediately moved him from short, where he was just not going to, if you take one look at him, that's not a shortstop. But there were people who were questioning, is he going to be able to stay on the dirt? He looked really good at third. A reader asked me if I thought he could go to second. I don't see why not. I think generally if you can play third, you can usually play second. He'd be wasting his arm. He's got a really good arm and probably should stay at third. And I think all three of those guys were in my top 20 last time around. Merrill was not on my midseason top 60. He's clearly a top 100 prospect at this point. Someone asked me in my chat, is he a top 30 prospect? It's a pretty unusual number to pick. Hey, is he in your top 41?
41's weird. 30's only a little weird.
At least it ends in a zero, right?
Right.
I don't know. We could pick prime numbers. I'd be fine with, you know, as a math guy, I'd be fine with that. But I don't know, right? Those specific, something more specific like that. I mean, I haven't sat down to re-rank. Since I did the exercise, and I do deliberately try not to. I don't keep that as kind of a living document because I would much rather every time I do a ranking, I do it from scratch. I don't want this to be, I would say it's not, this is not the Billboard charts, right? He's up this since the last week. He's down. He's rising with a bullet. No, I'm not. It's not how I want to do this because I don't want to be skewed by previous rankings. The guy was on the last ranking, doesn't belong in the new ranking. I shouldn't put him on. So I don't think that way. However, I feel very confident that Merrill is a top 100 prospect. That is enough. I have no problem being that specific. Where exactly he lands, I don't know. I think he's very good. You know, as I said, I didn't see a lot of great pitching. Hence, I mentioned Priester was good. He's been good. Rocker was just so-so. He's lowered his arm slot, and I don't love it. And I know a lot of people who don't love it. And there was a lot of disappointment in how the velocity coming out of his arm is great. I don't think he has the breaking ball he used to have. And I think the command and control are a little less than they were. However, this guy's also barely pitched in the last 18 months. So I'm also not jumping off entirely. This guy was third pick in the draft. At one point, we were talking about him as a possible one candidate back in 2021. He's a big, strong, athletic kid with a lot of velocity in that arm. I am, if he comes out next spring throwing bullets, I am not going to be surprised. And I am, you know, perfectly happy to say, okay, we, you know, re-rank him, change the outlook. That's fine. I don't love what I see right now. And I would just sort of leave it at that and say, we've got to revisit, you know, after an off season and see where he looks and what he looks when they stretch him out too. It was a one inning appearance, his first outing, and a two inning appearance that I saw. He's not pitching a whole lot because of all the time that he missed. But in terms of pitching prospects, God, unless I'm blanking on somebody, those were kind of the biggest names that I saw. Oh, I'll throw one more in there who wasn't a big name, but Mason Miller in the A's system was 97 to 100 at 109 times for me as a starter for pure stuff. I don't think there are a lot of starters who have better stuff than he does. And it was a pretty good slider too. And he's got size, and he missed most of the season with an injury to a muscle below the shoulder. So he only threw about 7 or 8 innings during the entire regular season, but he seems perfectly healthy now. And if he can hold up, that's a pretty high ceiling starter. I think he could start based on what I saw. And we don't have a lot. Scouts didn't have a lot of looks, but I talked to somebody who had a regular season look at him or had some history with him, I should say, and also agreed. Like, this guy got a chance to be a star. I mean, he's probably the best pitching prospect in that system now. And obviously, there will be opportunities fairly soon in Oakland for prospects at just about any position, I would say. So they're always worth keeping an eye on. And it's a great place to pitch, too.
Yeah.
So I'm reasonably optimistic. If you tell me, oh, there's A's have this interesting pitching prospect, my ears go up. Like bias cat. Okay, yeah, I'm interested. They've had good success there in Oakland, taking guys who I didn't love as potential starters and turning them into stars. And I think some of it is development. Some of it is a very favorable ballpark. And now we're talking about a guy in Miller who's got legit stuff. I'm very interested to see what he looks like next year if he's healthy and able to handle actual starters workload.
So a lot to check out in the takeaways piece that Keith has up on The Athletic. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/baseball show. You can find Keith on Twitter at Keith Law. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. That's going to do it for this episode of The Athletic Baseball Show. Enjoy the playoff games this weekend. The show is back with you on Monday.